The gang from 2016 is getting back together. And why wouldn't President Trump be considered another female now at the top of the Democratic ticket, as well as many other similarities to 2016? It seems like an obvious decision to bring in the team that actually won Trump the presidency. But is the Trump team expanding, being generated naturally as they get closer to Election Day? Or is it a sign the president does not like the current path of the campaign and bring in a group who has delivered a victory against expectations? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this is Perspective. Corey Lewandowski, Taylor Budowich, Alex Pfeiffer, Alex Bruchowitz, and Tim Murtaugh are all veterans of prior Trump campaigns who have officially been called back into Trump campaign service. However, considering that most have just been working in the MAGA Inc. super PAC and that Corey Lewandowski himself never stopped being an unofficial advisor to Trump, this announcement seems almost like a given, even though it is drawing some heat. Now, following a shaky 2 weeks after the Republican National Convention and the advancement of Kamala Harris and the addition of Tim Walz, the Democratic ticket has dominated the headlines, which just a few weeks before were covering the assassination attempts. Current aides on the Trump campaign had found themselves in a semi-new position, being criticized for some of the same reasons the campaign used against Biden. Age, agility, and sound of mind had become topics of many news outlets. But this time, instead of referring to the Democrat frontrunner, it was aimed at the Republican. So could this be why former President Trump is bringing some of the benchwarmers back into the game? Well, let us discuss with our panel. Carter Clues is president of Constitutional Rights. Steve Gill is a conservative talk show host and strategist. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen.
Thanks, Scotty.
Well, let us start off with you, Steve, because why do you think President Trump is bringing these and the other 2016 campaign staffers in now? And do you think the change that happened on the DNC ticket caused this to happen?
You know, it's possible because, again, in 2016, they were trying to navigate the rough waters of running against a female and Hillary Clinton, so that at least on the surface, there are similarities that running against Joe Biden, doddering, demented Joe Biden, is different than running against Kamala Harris, who's a blank slate, and they're trying to fill in the blanks at this point. But I don't think that, you know, Team Corey won in 2016 because they were adept at running against a woman. You know, I've long felt that Trump was the only Republican who could have beaten Hillary because he was going to be aggressive, and Hillary was the only Democrat who could have lost to Trump. So I think that we may have the same kind of situation here, that Trump can beat Kamala Harris if he sticks to the issues that matter, talking about grocery prices, food prices, gas prices, the economy, and the border. Illegal immigration matters. It's the top of the list when people talk about their concerns, because it covers national security. Are terrorists coming across the board? It covers the economy. Are they taking our jobs? It covers our communities. Are they safer or less safe? If he will talk about nothing but those issues, he wins.
Well, I want to talk about the similarities and the differences, I think, between the 2024 race and the 2016 race. Carter, do you think it matters that you have Hillary Clinton versus Kamala Harris, and the fact that with Hillary, you were just dealing with the gender discrepancy, but now you have a gender and a race issue, that element? How do you think that changes, or does it matter?
I really don't think the race issue matters. I think blacks are a little smarter than that. You know, that Kamala Harris, you know, she's a chameleon, and whatever color she decides is going to benefit her that day, that's what she says she is. I live in a lower middle income neighborhood, but most of my neighbors are black and they're not buying into it at all. The women definitely don't like her because they remember the Willie Brown scandal. People have memories. People have memories. The men don't like her because she's a termagant. Okay. So the race thing, she's going to play the race card. And when she talks to a black crowd, she don't talk like this to them, and they are going to be turned off. So no, I don't think the race card is going to be a major issue. And thank God Trump is calling them out on it. You know, stop it. Come on. Let's talk issues. I'm with Steve. Talk issues.
Okay.
Talk issues.
Everybody tells Trump, though, to talk issues. And that's what they're bringing in Corey Lewandowski, who often, Steve, said, let Trump be Trump. Do you think, why is Trump at this point not focusing on issues? Does he also, what good does it do for Trump to focus on these other little I would almost call them more superficial issues. And why does he still keep harping on them if every expert in the field says don't?
Well, Trump is an entertainer. He loves being an entertainer. He sees himself as a guy who ought to be hosting late night comedy shows better than any of those who are losing their jobs. But in an hour and a half speech, he'll throw in a couple of these humorous sides, and that's all the media points out. Media Research Center says that 89% of the coverage for Kamala to this point has been positive. 89% of the coverage for Donald Trump has been negative. So he can talk policy issues, and all they will do is harp on some side comment he makes that's a joke that appeals to the crowd and appeals to his base. And the left has no sense of humor at all. So they attack him for anything he says that's the least bit humorous. I will say that he's made a great shift in the last couple of weeks. All politics is local, and all politics is visual. The other day when he stepped out with grocery carts on both sides of him, with milk cartons and bread and other food items, and talked about the specific price increases, that was brilliant. He needs to do a lot more of that. He needs to do the same thing when it comes to gas prices. Be out there with pictures of the difference in what they cost on those big signs when he left office, what they cost now. Make it visual and drive those economic issues home.
But Carter, to Steve's point, Trump can talk about policy all he wants. He can make that the dominating part of his speech. But he makes one little sidebar comment off teleprompter, or maybe it is in the teleprompter, and that's what the media focuses on. I mean, right now, the big stir is all about how can he bash those that received awards for being the Medal of Honor, the Congressional Medal of Honor. How dare he bash those kind of the military that way? That's what they harp on. They don't harp on any other part of his speech on the side of it. So how can Trump win in that situation?
I think, again, I'm in agreement with Steve. Look, these asides appeal tremendously to his base. I also have a home in the hillbilly hills of West Virginia, okay? And trust me, those asides, it's a community of 1,500 homes, right? It's a vacation community. Every home has a Trump flag, and these people are adamant about it, okay? These are Virginia hillbillies. They love the asides. So Trump is smart. That's playing to that base. And on the issues, no, the media aren't going to cover him. But wait till they get to a debate, and you'll see Trump hone in on the issues. He's very savvy. He's a very savvy man.
He is a very savvy man. But then, Steve, how does he not avoid? And I was talking about the Presidential Medal of Honor yesterday, that he talked about how that was the difference between that and getting the Congressional Medal of Honor at a fundraiser. That is what the media is harping on to show that Trump actually doesn't like the military and he's bashing them. How would you suggest and advise him right now when it comes to those issues? If you know the media is already going to be out for you, do you need to stick so close to the script?
No, because I think that does take away Trump's, you know, ability to be Trump, which is one of the appealing factors to a lot of independents and others. He's not going to take crap from anybody. And I think that's what people want in a president who's going to fight for them, who's not going to bow down and cater to the media or to the critics. Look, they can't really criticize Trump for a lot of what he says or does. They have to make stuff up, like Project 2025. He has nothing to do with it. They're still waving that at the Democratic National Convention that he supported Nazis in Charlottesville. Everybody has denounced that. They're still talking about it from the stage as demented Joe Biden can't get past the lies to talk about the truth. So it doesn't matter what Trump says, what Trump does. If they don't have anything on him, they will make something up and not let the truth interfere with their attacks.
Okay, so Carter, do you think Corey Lewandowski coming in might be a signal and a change and a shift in the campaign strategy moving forward? I mean, is this pushing Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita out, or are they all going to try to work together?
I think Lewandowski coming in is a great move. He's a nasty guy. He's a nasty guy. I mean, you know, his testimony before the January 6th committee was brilliant. He just handed them all their heads, and he didn't care what they did to him, whether they held him in contempt or not. Trump needs that. He was getting advice from Wiles in particular. We have to tone it down. We don't want to offend anybody. Yeah, you want to offend anybody. You want to offend the hell out of the media. That's your base. That's who loves you, okay? And everybody else is going to come on the issues. Look, people fill their gas tank. Okay, you don't have to tell them. In my Jeep, it cost me twice as much to fill the gas tank. Scotty, you don't have to drive that home. People know it. Okay, any attention Trump gets, Corey is going to say Trump, as you and Steve both just said, let Trump be Trump. I had this when I worked with Reagan in 84, and everybody tried to get him, you know, you have to change your way and all. And thank God Nancy came in and told the media, shut the hell up, and told Reagan, his advisor, shut up, let him be himself. He went back to being himself, and he won the election. Let Trump be Trump. Well, that's what people love. And he's a fighter.
And that's it. I mean, fight seems to be a word that's been key at the DNC this week. But you're right. Prior to that, it was Steve. You know, Steve, we talked about the female element of this. You know, Kellyanne Conway has been rumored to be around the campaign. Do you think she's waiting in the background to replace them? And could she actually help forward this momentum that's starting to somewhat slow, at least in the present, like she did in 2016 when they kind of plateaued?
Kellyanne Conway is an absolute disaster. She's just done a deal to take $50,000 a month from Ukraine.
Amen,
to promote
brother.
Their interest.
Amen.
And the bottom line is, we've spent hundreds of billions of dollars in Ukraine. They can't account for the money. Scotty, you used to babysit my little boys when they were little. When they would come in on Friday after I gave them money and come in Saturday morning saying, Dad, I need some more money, my first question is, what did you do with the money? We haven't asked that of Ukraine, and Kellyanne Conway is going to continue to cover it up. Trump's biggest weakness is he doesn't understand that personnel is policy. And he would have had a second term if he had not brought people in who were pursuing the wrong policies or undercutting his policies for their agenda. Their job as a Trump advisor or working in the Trump administration is to promote his policies, to move his agenda ahead, not undercutting, backstabbing. That was the mistake in the first administration, and he doesn't need to make that mistake the next time he has the chance to be in the White House.
Okay, on that point, I want to take a break. Carter, Steve, stay with me, because right when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about...
I got to talk about that when we get
exactly.
Back.
We will talk about that. And another subject, which seems to be getting a little attention on the campaign trail, policy of the presidential candidates, when we return. Welcome back to Perspective. I'm your host, Skynell Hughes. We are less than 4 months from Election Day, but as of July 2024, 47 states, the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands offer early in-person voting to all voters. Three states, Alabama, Mississippi, and New Hampshire, do not offer early in-person voting, though they may provide options for eligible absentee voters. Which, following the completion of the DNC this week and a campaign which seems to have been going on since 2020, we will now officially be in the final stretch. But with this last-minute change to the Democratic ballot, how will this affect the Trump campaign strategy, as well as the people being expected to deliver a win for Trump in November? Let us bring back in our panel Carter Clues, president of Constitutional Rights, Steve Gill, conservative talk show host and strategist, and to balance out our panel, Alan Grayson, attorney and former Democrat congressman. Thank you so much for joining me. You know, before we left, Carter, you wanted to hit on the point about Kellyanne Conway. I want to let you finish your thoughts.
Thank you so much. Bringing on, Steve, thank you for what you said. Bringing on Kellyanne Conway is kind of like Adam and Eve inviting the snake into the Garden of Eden, okay? Let's just get down to brass tacks here. She betrayed Trump in his first term. Right when the election came up, she fled and abandoned him. And then she went out and she talked about how wrong Trump was and what he had done. And let me make one more point. And women all over the country are going to understand this. And husbands are damn well going to understand it. Conway, that little frog-looking husband of hers, could not have attacked Trump like he did unless she had consented. Look, I'm married. I've been married three times. When my wives said something, don't do that, I was like a damn dog and stopped and put my tail between my legs. She let that guy do that, and I think she colluded with him on his attacks on Trump. I can't stand the woman. Trump needs to get her out of there and get Tulsi Gabbard in. That's my opinion. There we go.
Well, those are pretty strong opinions, and I bet when you said no is what happened to the first two wives. So let me just take a wild guess on that one. Wives don't take to no very well. But let's bring in Alan Grayson to this conversation, because as a Democrat watching everything going on the Trump team, remove the fact that you obviously do not support the person at the top of the title. Do Democrats have this same type of issues within their party with their presidential campaign? I mean, let's just look at it. They just took out one candidate and replaced him with the top of the ticket. How do Democrats view right now kind of what's going on within the Trump team, and how do they capitalize on it?
Look, a modern campaign, for better or for worse, raises all the money that it can from donors and then spends it on usually 30-second ads. They could be on Facebook, they could be on streaming, they could be on broadcast, they could be on cable, they could be on your show. But that's what a campaign does, and it doesn't require a great mind to be able to do any of that. The Democrats have their stuff together. They're raising enormous amounts of money like we've never seen before in such short periods of time. And they're spending it to persuade the voters. They're spending it on what the voters see and what the voters hear. So no, the Democrats don't have the problem. In the case of the Republicans, they're just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. Does it really matter which flunky is in charge? No, not really. They're all toadies to Trump. It doesn't matter at all. The Democrats don't have that problem at all.
Well, it's interesting, Steve. I'm going to bring you on to respond to that, because leading up to this, even back in June, the conversation was, well, we've got people didn't like the people at the top of the ticket, both the top of the tickets. Democrats replaced theirs. Republicans have stuck by Trump. Do you see that as the same issue, that the Democrats now are all aligned behind their candidate now that they've put somebody at the top that they seem to people seem to be joyous about?
You know, they removed their president without a vote. They put in somebody else without a vote while screaming, it's about democracy. You know, give me a break. And Alan, I don't think there's any split in the Democratic Party unless you go talk to the 100,000 protesters for Palestine out front. You know, they're screaming and even waving banners inside. Look, there's not a more confused crowd as we're in the middle of the week of the Democratic National Committee than the Democrats in Chicago. And the two top of the list that are confused are the Gays for Gaza protesting outside, apparently completely ignorant of what would happen to them if they were in Gaza being thrown off roofs, or maybe worse, the folks that are signing up for the free abortions and free transitions outside on the front steps. You know, I want every guy at this convention to go get a vasectomy so we don't have another generation of these nitwits being produced. But the real confused are the guys who've become women's who are still standing up for their either free abortions or free vasectomies. Basic biology escapes Democrats at this point, including tampon Tim Walz.
Well, and that's what I want to bring up with you, Alan, on this one, because what do you think are the main issues which separate President Trump from Kamala Harris right now that mainly is the differentiator, that red line in the sand that can't be blundered and works well for both sides?
Well, look, politics is economic and politics is also sociological. There are two different elements to politics. Economically, it's clear that Kamala has the sense that people are facing difficulties economically and she has a good idea of what to do about it. In other words, she's grounded in reality. In Trump's case, he thinks he gets a bright idea about everything every 5 minutes and spews it out there and acts like everybody should worship him over it, that he's the Messiah when it comes to the economy. He's gone bankrupt 6 times. He's been convicted of 34 crimes, or is it 36? I don't remember. So economically, the Democrats are in a great position. This is the longest time in American history, I believe, when unemployment's been below 5%. That means that people are working, they're supporting themselves. That's what really matters. Now, psychologically, what people see is they see a self-competent, accomplished woman who knows what she wants in life and has gotten it together under the banner of doing good things for other people. That's what she's all about. She has said, I deserve your vote because I can be the best president or vice president or senator or attorney general for you. And on the other hand, we have somebody who's obviously very old at this point. Not anything against that. I hope to be that old one day. He's very old. He's extremely cranky. Get off my lawn is what he says over and over again. He's fearful. You could see it whenever he's speaking. He's afraid. Maybe he's afraid of death. Maybe he's afraid of prison. Maybe he's afraid of losing. Maybe he's afraid of bankruptcy. But he's afraid. And he has this enormous free-floating grievance about everything that is extremely unappealing. He sounds like a loser. And that's the problem that the Republicans have right now. We have somebody who knows how to laugh versus somebody who can't even imagine laughing. And never has left. When's the last time you heard Donald Trump left?
Well, knows how to cackle.
Let me give this.
He knows how to cackle. Come
Let's
on,
give
Alan.
This to Carter.
Is your hearing all right? Alan, by the way, I'm 78, same age, and my hearing is obviously better than yours. That ain't a laugh. That's a cackle. That is grating. Okay, the woman is grating. She's not selling to the American people. She was the most unpopular vice president in history. She's getting a bump right now because of people like you and people in the media selling a non-existent product, and the American people know it. How do you defend the border? 15 million illegal aliens crossed our border, invaded our country, and you think this woman did a great job on it. I know what you're going to say. Well, she really wasn't in charge of the border. She was, according to Joe Biden. We remember the quote when he put her in charge. So, you know, stop trying to make believe. And she's a career politician. She's never held a real job. Like, oh, wait a minute. She has an ad that says she worked at McDonald's. Stop it. Stop it. As a kid, you know, you're defending someone who is the exact opposite of everything you just described. So no wonder you were a politician.
But let me point this out, though. And this show is actually focused on the teams that are behind the two top candidates. We're talking about the turnover and what's going on with the Trump team. Even with a new candidate at the top, the Democrats, Kamala, you're not hearing about people leaving or coming in. Alan, why are the Democrats able to march all unified, at least to publicly? Well, like I said, we're talking about everybody going on, sort of like a reality show going on within the Trump team.
Well, it's because who's on the top? I mean, Kamala is a successful candidate. She was the first this, the first that, and so on. And she knows how to run a campaign. She knows that when you have the political industrial complex working for you, which both parties have at their availability as long as they pay them, all you need to do is to just raise the money and have it spent in a professional manner. There's no need for drama. Trump needs drama. He needs to be the center of attention. He thrives on it, and it's his poison. And the same thing is true of lies. Where are the lies that the Democrats are spewing out? They're not there. Okay, they're not there. We have people who understand the difference between truth and lies. And I have to say, I'm not going to get into personalities here, but what we heard just from one of the other panelists was a stream of lies. Not exactly on a Trumpian scale. He set the all-time record. Yeah, and the Democrats simply don't do that. They don't do that. Donald Trump said 30,000 public lies during his presidency. Cackling. I'm here cackling.
I hear cackling.
30,000 public lies during his pregnancy. Presidency, and Kamala simply just gets up there and says, "We can do better. Let's feed the hungry. Let's clothe the naked, for God's sake. I think we can all agree with that. Let's heal the sick. Let's shelter the homeless. We are the country that landed on the moon. We are the country that won two world wars. We can do well for ourselves as well." And that's the message that people appreciate much more than grievance, endless grievance, whining, which is all they ever get from Donald Trump.
Okay, so first of all, I want to congratulate you. The political industrial complex, thank you for giving me that new lingo, that term. We are going to make that. I think that is a very good term to describe both sides. Steve, I'm going to give you the last word on this one. We've got 1 minute left. To the former congressman's point on that issue right there. You're looking at what's going on right now. You're looking at the Harris campaign. They're all joy. Trump campaign seems negative. What's the difference between a campaign talking about the negativity or just talking about the reality and it just happens to be a negative situation?
Yeah, anybody that watched Joe Biden's speech Monday night didn't see joy. He was an angry man. He was literally the guy yelling, "Get off my lawn." And apparently those like Alan who are promoting that the economy's doing great, well, like the Democrats are claiming, haven't gone grocery shopping, haven't bought bread, haven't bought gas, haven't bought ground beef. Even Kamala, in a rare moment of coherence, acknowledged that the prices are up 50% while she and Joe Biden have overseen this economy, and now she's going to fix it after they broke it. The bottom line is, you want chock full of lies, go back and look at Joe Biden's speech on Monday night.
And that is actually a great way to finish this out today. Steve, Carter, Alan, thank you so much for continuing this conversation. We'll probably meet again because we have a long campaign road ahead of us. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Scotty.
Thank you.
Let Trump be Trump, one of Corey Lewandowski's famous phrases, which eventually became the title of his book, reflected Corey's directive and even at times I've seen it be his warning to those who are trying to micromanage Donald J. Trump in the early stages of the 2016 campaign. Now, later, Corey would be replaced by now-convicted felon Paul Manafort, whom Trump pardoned before leaving office. Manafort would follow the 2016 campaign RNC, be replaced by Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon, who Bannon would later serve as the White House chief strategist for the first 7 months of U.S. President Donald Trump's administration, all before Trump discharged him. Kellyanne is almost the same. But while campaigns naturally have turnover, the whiplash of those who are with the campaign one day, thrown out the next, and following a brief round of press appearances, brought back in, some form of the campaign is happening. Well, unless you are sitting in jail, as Steve Bannon currently finds himself in. I guess that in 2024, President Trump would rather surround himself with the familiar and the vintage in these last few months, knowing that their loyalty had already been tested. Or maybe by bringing in the architect of the let Trump be Trump strategy and the guard dog to guarantee it, Trump realized the reason why he lost in 2020 was not because of the message of the campaign, but rather the people who were running it. But hey, that's just my perspective. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes. Thanks for watching.